Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. Jack, how we doing?
Doing really well today.
We have an excellent guest, one who is from a school that I used to coach at, our first Division II guest, right?
Sure is.
It's Mike Shimana from St. Anselm's College. Beautiful campus. Had the best season in program history last year. Got to the NCAA semifinals. Just an incredible story. It's a small school in New Hampshire, and they just did the thing in 2021, and I think they're going to do it again in 2022.
Yeah, he's built a great culture at St. Anselm's, and he's finding very good lacrosse players that may have an opportunity to play at the Division I level and choose to go to St. A's because they have the opportunity to play in the NCAAs and try and fight and win a national championship.
I hear he's got a lot of Piatelli lacrosse players on his roster.
He does. We've built a very good relationship the last few years, and he likes our players, and players who are at St. A's are doing very well in the classroom and impact players on the field.
So for all of you listeners, this is the best example of D2 that we can give you. And with no further ado, let's talk to St. Anselm's head coach, Mike Shimana. Thanks for tuning in to the New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. We have our first Division II head coach from St. Anselm, Mike Shimana. How are we doing, coach?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I think actually, is St. A's sponsored by Piatelli Lacrosse or no? You just got a lot of those players on your roster.
Some of his guys that ended up choosing St. A's because they felt like it was the right fit for them. So we love those guys.
Absolutely. I had a chance to come down and see one of your fall ball practices. That write-up is on laxjournal.com. One of the things that I noticed the most is that, first of all, you guys had a regimented schedule. You stuck to it. You went through it. And you ended with very situational drills and scrimmage situations, even though it's the fall. And it was a tune-up practice before you played MIT. But can you kind of speak more to that process of building a team in the fall to compete in the spring?
Yeah. I think our fall practices are fairly similar to our preseason practices in the spring. It's almost like you do it in the fall and then you do it again in the spring. So for us, a big focus in the fall is getting our systems in. We're Division II, so we do get quite a few practices in the fall that we're able to take advantage of. So we want to have our clear in and really be dialed in with our clear, especially going into a scrimmage in the fall. And then we want our 6v6 offense systems in. We want our defensive systems in. We want our ride in. We weren't quite as concerned with man up, man down, things like that. But definitely the clear, like that is number one priority for us. We didn't do great in that category against Springfield last weekend. We talked about it. It's something we spend a ton of time on. And it's a thing that you can end possessions and limit the amount of possessions another team's offense gets, but also give your team extra possessions. And sometimes the ball comes right back down your throat if you can't clear it. So we do 30 minutes a day probably on clearing the ball.
Yeah, the game has changed, the clearing situation with the shot clock. And I love the fact that riding is back in the game and the reaction time to get the ball over the midfield. You have 20 seconds. So as you're clearing, not only your philosophy, but your X's and O's changed because of the shot clock?
Not a ton. I think I'm not exactly sure what the rule was before. I think we had 20 seconds to clear it before anyways, or maybe 30 seconds to touch it in the box. But so the amount of time you have in your own defensive end to get the ball over is fairly similar. The thing that we want to do with our clear is kind of create transition out of it. And it can even happen in a settled clear. It doesn't necessarily have to be goalie makes a save. We get it up quick and we're pushing transition. It can be, you know, a clear where we have a two-on-one and an attackman has to stay over on the backside. And, you know, we get two guys getting over the midfield line and now we're kind of pushing that two-on-one on the opposite box side. And, you know, Kyle saw that when we practice. We have a drill we do every day. Not every day, but probably two or three times a week called window clearing drill that we came up with. We're just working on finding that two-on-one on the opposite box side and then creating transition out of it. So that's our biggest focus on the clear is getting that transition out of it, even if it is a longer clear. You know, I think that the other thing is if we can get it up quicker, then we have more time to play offense now. So that's the biggest thing that's changed really with that shot clock is if we can clear it in 10 seconds, now we have 70 seconds to play. Oh, we have maybe 10 seconds to get our subs and then play 60 seconds of offense. So it definitely extends your offensive time with the shot clock if you can, you know, clear it quickly. And then riding, you know, the opposite of that, if we can get a team to take 15, 20 seconds to clear it and then they get through their subs, now you might only have to play a 45 to 50 second possession on the defensive end, which goes quickly. And once you start getting down to 20, 15 seconds on the shot clock, offenses start to, you know, get concerned with that shot clock, maybe rush things. And it's definitely to your advantage on the defensive end. The biggest thing I think that changed the clear from my time at Endicott was when they took the horn out. You know, that was definitely, that was a while ago, but that definitely made things different with the clear. You know, those sidelines, those out of bounds, you can't get four guys and get them in this perfect spot and set it up. You need guys who can find space and be creative in the clear and be smart lacrosse players to get the ball out of your own end.
When I played at Springfield, we actually had three attackmen that played on the riding team. So the horn would blow, the three attackmen would run out in the field, the three attackmen that were on the field would come off, and they'd blow the whistle, and we had a riding attack team.
That's awesome.
It's amazing how the game has changed.
Wait, which one were you on? Which one were you on? Don't lie. There's no way you're on the riding team. There's no way.
What?
There's no way you're on the riding team.
I was on the riding
team. I don't believe it for a second. We're going to have to call Coach Bug. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
That was. That's my only good attribute. It's, I ride like a demon. That's it. So, I'm glad we have a fellow passion for the ride on here. Sorry, Coach. Just
no worries,
in
no
studio
worries.
Banter. I think, you know, you guys had the best season in the history of St. A's last season, you know, making it to the NCAA, you know, semifinals. You and I discussed after the practice I went to, I used to coach there and things were very different in 2006 than they are now. What has changed for you as a coach from going from Endicott, which is D3, to D2 at St. A's, and how has the transition been to go from a team that, you know, was in the NE10 and competitive to basically almost winning it this year?
Yeah. Division two is a little different from division three. I enjoy it because we get to spend a lot more time with our guys in the fall, especially. You know, we may practice 35 times this fall, which is great. So I think the biggest thing is you can get young guys in, you can get them in early, you can get them experienced early with multiple scrimmages in the fall, lots of practices. They know the systems by the time the spring comes around. And then those guys are able to compete in games come, you know, late February and March. And that's something that we've been able to do for the past 4 years is really have young guys make an impact right off the bat. You know, recruiting's different at the Division II level when you can offer a kid athletic aid. That obviously kind of changes the game a little bit. So that's enjoyable to be able to really, if you got a kid that you're really, really want and you're competing maybe against a Division III school for him, you know, the opportunity to give that young man some athletic aid kind of shows how much you like them and what you think their potential could be at your program. So that's the biggest difference from D2 to D3 as far as, you know, from when we first started in the NE10 to where we are now, our mindset hasn't really changed. We've always kind of set high, lofty goals and tried to accomplish them. Whether they were realistic at the time didn't really matter. That's what's driven our guys off the field, on the field, to push themselves as far as they possibly can. And so now where we're at, just being one of the better teams, I think, in the NE10. And if you're one of the better teams in the NE10, you're one of the best teams in the country. It helps us in recruiting, and it does put a little bit more added pressure on our guys now, though. You know, like this fall, I think some of our guys are feeling that, and we got new guys who haven't played as much for us in the past that have to step up and take on bigger roles, but the expectation doesn't change. So dealing with that pressure and those high expectations will be a big thing for us this year, especially, you know, with a younger team and not as much experience as we had last year. Like last year's team, we had been building towards 2021 for a while. That was our first real recruiting class. Myself, Coach Anthony Nardella, who came in with me 6 years ago, that was our first real class that we got the whole process with. We saw them in the summer, the fall, and we were able to get those guys in, and we were circling 2021 for a while. So that was the culmination of 4 years of extremely hard work out of those guys and the guys that came before them to help change the culture. So expectations are high, but our guys just need to meet those challenges every day, and hopefully we can have success this year.
Hopefully the compliance tests for the coaches are still open book. That was the hardest part.
It's changed.
Is it different now? Is it harder?
It's easier actually. They're like these models, or so you just like go through them. They're a lot easier. It's not one 30 question test now. It's like 6 or 7 5 question tests.
Yeah.
And so you have to pass them all, but it's still not the funnest thing.
For the listeners, coaches at Division II and Division I have to pass an NCAA rules test in order to be a coach at a university. And I didn't have to do that my first year when I was coaching at Plymouth State because they're D3. And I went D2, and they're like, I went to Franklin Pierce, and they were like, hey, you have to do this test. I was like, what test? Test for what? I can't take tests. I'm an English. I can only write papers. I can't write tests. I can't do tests. And they're like, it's open book. It's fine. And it still took me like 2 hours. So that's good that they changed it. I'm very happy about that.
Yes, they've changed it. It's much, much better situation now.
Yep.
They made it untimed for you.
Just for me.
You had as much time as you needed to finish it and make sure all your answers were correct.
I did. They had page number annotations and everything. Yes.
And you went to Clark, and that certainly helped.
Wow. All
but right. Anyways, Coach, sorry to go off track there, but explain to our listeners how the recruiting process works in Division II, because it's a little bit different, and the scholarship money, when you can actually start talking to players, when players are able to commit verbally to a Division II program like, say, in Anselm's.
So Division II, we're a little bit different than D3 and D1, obviously, and then the rules dictate what we can do. So we can start talking to recruits, prospective student athletes, what we call them. We can start talking to them in June going into their junior year. Okay, so we could talk to 2023 recruits in June. Division I can't talk to them until September. Okay, so once we can start talking to them, we can obviously make them a verbal offer and they can make a verbal commitment. And so for us, the biggest thing is we're going to get their transcripts, find out where they're at academically. That'll give us an idea of merit awards for them and if they're a good candidate for admission to our school. And then from there, we can add athletic aid onto that. In our situation, we don't have a ton of athletic aid. So, you know, we kind of recruit on both a D3 model and a D2 model at times. So we can stack that athletic aid on top of merit. And then depending on their need, and the FAFSA form and things like that, they are also eligible for that. So that's kind of the way we package our kids. We typically give them the merit and the athletic number. I'm not the financial aid director, so I can't give them the need-based portion of it. Usually based on those two numbers, our guys feel, you know, confident that they want to make the decision to come to St. A's financially, and obviously that it's the right fit for them. That's a big part of the recruiting process, is getting them on campus for visits. Sometimes it's challenging because we're getting them on campus during the summer, so they're not seeing school with all the students on campus, and it's not this busy campus. It's kind of a quiet campus during the summer. But our campus shows really well. It's a beautiful place. And so getting them on campus is huge for us. Meeting them in person, meeting their families, and just starting that relationship. I tour pretty much every one of our recruits myself. I usually spend 2 to 2.5 hours with each recruit, touring them around campus, our athletics facilities, sitting them in my office and answering any questions, talking more about the program. We always end with just that we want guys that want to commit to St. A's because it's the right fit for them, for all the reasons kind of other than lacrosse. It's obviously part of it, But if they feel really comfortable and feel really good about St. A's socially, academically, distance from home, size, major, all those things that go into their decision, we feel like they'll have success in our athletic program as well, because we want them to reach their full potential everywhere. And when they do, that's how we have success. So if we can get 45 guys who are all in about St. A's, feel like it's the best place for them, that's how we win a national championship, because that's how our culture stays the way it is. That's how our culture continues to improve. And we have a saying in our program, culture is everything. And so if we can get guys that are all in and love St. A's, which our guys do, we can have more success.
Coach, how many players do you normally keep on your roster throughout the spring season?
We typically have anywhere from 42 to 45 guys. When I first took the job, we were at 34, and that was a struggle to do what we wanted to do in practice. You know, Kyle, again, saw our practice. We want to get up and down. We want to go from one drill to the next, to the next, to the next, and be really efficient and be fast-paced during our practice. So when you get 34 guys, that becomes more of a challenge. And then guys are going to get sick. Guys are going to get hurt. Guys are going to maybe miss practice because of a class. When you add all those things up, you might have 26, 28 guys at a practice. There's not a ton you can do. So 45, we feel like, is a great number for us. It gives us the best opportunity to practice the way we want. We want to scrimmage every day as well at the end of practice, whether it's 2 minutes or 20 minutes or a half hour, we want to scrimmage. And it also gives us an opportunity, I think, for every guy on our roster to feel like they're not too far away from playing time. You know, if they put in the work outside of practice, they grind, they do the right things in practice, they have an opportunity to step on the field. We start getting to 50, 55, you know, some of the rosters that are out there right now, that the back end of your roster is really far from the playing field. So that we feel like that's a sweet spot for us.
If I'm a good lacrosse player and I'm looking to play in college, why is St. Anselm's a good choice for them academically? What programs do you offer, and what differentiates you from playing Division One or playing Division Three?
Yeah, there's a number of factors that go into choosing a school like St. A's, as far as competing against a Division Three school for recruits or Division One. You know, with the Division Three, hopefully we can package them a little bit better. And I think a big selling point for us right now is the season we just had. So hopefully, you know, the opportunity to play in NCAA tournaments, compete for any 10 championships, which we've played for two of the last three NE10 tournament championships. The only other team that's done that in our conference is Lemoyne. They're a national powerhouse year in and year out. So the opportunity to compete for any 10 championships, be a nationally ranked team, and hopefully get in the NCAA tournament and make a run and hopefully, you know, win a national championship. That's our goal. Merrimack's done it. You know, I'm not saying we're Merrimack, but that's ultimately the goal. We've shown that a team from New England in Division II can get there. And so we're trying to kind of hopefully follow their model. And then, you know, Division III or some of the Division I programs, you know, it depends on the program, but we feel like we can be more competitive and have more success in some of those programs. And then if we can package a kid really well, we might be able to get a kid from a Division III program. So as far as the majors, business, our business program is really good. Finance, we have a ton of guys that are finance, you know, economics, business majors. And the way our curriculum works, a lot of guys can get double majors in those, which is great. You know, our goalie, CJ Hart, who is Division II goalie of the year, is a accounting and finance major, double major. And, you know, the other programs that are really good, criminal justice, we have quite a few criminal justice guys. We just started a 4+1 master's program with that. So we have a couple guys right now that are juniors, one of which was an All-American for us last year. He'll be back for a fifth year in that criminal justice program. And that's one of the best programs we have. Our nursing major is super competitive. Political science is really competitive as well. We host one of the presidential debates on our campus every 4 years. Every president since I think that sometime in the 60s has been on our campus. So not a lot of small Division II New England schools can say that. And then our sciences are strong as well. So we offer a ton of different majors. And obviously we offer a super competitive lacrosse program right now.
And if I'm going to throw one more selling point in for St. A's, just because I used to coach there, the traffic right now, we're in like late October right now. Traffic looking for Leafs and leaf peeping, pretty rough. make your way to St. A's and try to look over the side of the field, because it is like a kaleidoscope of amazing colors. I mean, I don't know if they'll let you on campus, but if they do, check it out the side. It's pretty great. I when I went to the practice, the leaves were turning. I was like, distract. No, I'm here to watch people play lacrosse. But it's beautiful. Like, whoever is your landscaper, by the way, like whatever that company is, they need double them up.
That's in house. That's our people doing that. They work
beautiful.
Same people who plow our field, and they plow our field like the morning after a snowstorm. So you got to get, I should have taken you up in the press box. That's a great view. You know, we have a 2-story press box at the stadium, and you can pretty much see all the mountains surrounding our campus, which you'd never know where 5 minutes from downtown Manchester, the largest city in New Hampshire. But we're 30 minutes from the mountains, you know, not too far from Boston, not from far from the coast. So for those few weeks in the beginning of the season, you're not too far from the beach. It's kind of the best of everything up there, and a beautiful campus.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. Catch the Sacred Heart University Pioneers on the ice this season. The Pioneers Division I men and women's hockey programs will not disappoint. Season ticket packages and individual tickets are on sale now at sacredheartpioneers.com. And opening in 2023, Sacred Heart University's Martiri Family Arena, a brand new 122,000 square foot premier skating facility in Fairfield, Connecticut. Learn more at sacredheartpioneers.com.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
You mentioned CJ Hart, D2 All-American. He is coming back for his fifth year. You also have Jack Andrews returning, your second leading scorer, who literally does not care about where he shoots from, which is my favorite thing about him. What else can you tell us about kind of some characteristics that your team plays with, and some of the maybe an individual guy that maybe we haven't heard of yet?
Yeah, we just want to play fast. I think that's the biggest thing that we're trying to do. We're not toughs by any stretch of the imagination, but when I was at Endicott, that was a team we played every single year and played in NCAA tournaments. And I saw firsthand the advantages of just playing fast, pushing transition, pushing the pace, and just forcing teams to play at your speed. So ultimately that's what we want to do on the defensive side of the ball. You know, we want to slide, apply heavy ball pressure and force teams into mistakes. We want to get a ball up quick and clear it, push transition, push early offense, play the substitution game. You know, we have calls for different things that we're trying to do in the substitution game to get advantages. And then offensively just, you know, try to play fast as well there. We just feel like it's more challenging for a team to play to your speed when you're playing fast than it is for us to have to slow down for a team like a Lemoyne. I think that's the next step for us, is just when we play the best teams in the country, is trusting those systems and relying on those on that to have success. I think sometimes when we play LeMoyne, we're afraid to push it and make mistakes and things like that. But I think we need to live with some of those mistakes and continue to push the pace. You know, we scored a couple really nice goals in transition on picks and things like that against LeMoyne in the playoffs. I wish we did a little bit more of it because it's hard to get goals against those guys. And we know when we play Adelphi this year, who we didn't play last year, we're going to have to do the same thing. They're always one of the best teams in the country as well. And then guys that, you know, maybe we haven't talked about. Ryan Slattery on the defensive end was an All-American for us last year, who's done a really good job. He's a great leader for us. You know, Andrew Bonavita is probably a guy who doesn't get a lot of publicity. He's started since he was a freshman right alongside Ryan. And, you know, he's just a great defenseman, super fundamental, always on guys' hands. And he's done a great job for us on the defensive end. Two guys, unsung heroes, D. Mitties, right? We love D. Mitties. Coach Nardella played D. Mitty at Western New England for Coach Klepacki. And we have some great D. Mitties. Ben Jeunesse, who's a captain for us. Will Palmer, who's a fifth-year guy for us, who's just worked extremely hard to get where he's at. And he's great. And Will Harvey as well, who's done a great job for us, who's a 6'4" D. Mitty who moves really well. So those are some guys on the defensive end. Offensive end, some guys that will have to step up and have played for a while for us, but maybe took a backseat to some of our seniors last year. Our guy like Jack Robinson, a Western Mass guy, really slick lefty attackman, great stick, smart. We went down to Florida Tech his freshman year. I think it was like an overtime game, 17-16 or 16-15, and he had 8 ground balls as an attackman. So maybe we were sloppy in the offensive end and he picked up a lot of random ground balls, but for an attackman to have 8 ground balls, just shows kind of he'll do the little things, and we need him to step up this year on the offensive side of the ball.
Just put him on the riding team.
Yeah. He rides really hard.
Absolutely.
Coach. He's been a great addition for us, and yeah, he'll definitely have to step up. You know, he was playing on attack with 2 seniors last year as a sophomore, and now he's a junior and he's going to be playing with either guys that might be older but haven't logged a lot of minutes for us, or playing with younger guys who haven't played college lacrosse yet. So he's going to have to be the leader down there.
And Jack Robinson is a perfect example of a kid. He had aspirations to play Division I lacrosse. And I think it was a bit of a challenge or to accept the fact that he would be better suited to play at the Division II level, and to see him have the success and the great experience he's having at St. Anselm's really speaks volumes to a lot of players out there whose goals are, you know, Division I, because you can go to, you know, a St. Anselm's, not only get a great education, but play for a national championship. And Kyle and I were talking about you before the podcast. It was all good. Nothing bad, Coach. And Kyle might have said a couple of bad things about you.
That's all right.
But I believe the X factor for your program is recruiting. We see you everywhere. Everywhere we are, you are. You're on the field watching games all summer long in the fall, attending recruiting camps, and I really think that's the X factor, and that's why you're having the success you're having, because of the time and the effort you have put in to find the right players to be successful on the field, and I commend you for that.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I think Coach Miller, when I was at UMass, my brief stint there, said it's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmies and the Joes. And so you know, I believe that if we can get the right guys in, guys that want to work hard, obviously guys that are talented to begin with, we're going to continue to have success. So you got to find them. You got to get out there and recruit. And obviously, you know, we've been able to do that and we've been lucky. I think I just go to where the Piatelli guys are. So maybe that's why you think I'm everywhere. But yeah, it definitely, you know, getting on the road and recruiting and seeing guys in person helps for sure.
Yeah, I will definitely back that up. I was talking to other coaches and coaches of the club teams, and they're like, there's two teams and two guys that are everywhere. And for D2, it's you. And for D3, it's the union coach who is just in New England all the time. I'm like, what are you doing here? Like, you know, that's like an upstate New York school. But you are all over the place in Massachusetts. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit after practice, and I think your next great frontier might be invading that upstate New York territory as well.
Yeah, we'll see. It's easier said than done. But yeah, I mean, our school draws Massachusetts, New England kids in general. I think we're 60% Massachusetts kids. You know, I played lacrosse in Massachusetts, went to school in Massachusetts for college, and, you know, have a lot of friends that coach high school teams, coach club teams. I've made connections with guys like Jack. So that's definitely helped to have those connections with those guys. It helps in recruiting. And so we've leaned on those relationships to get guys, and those guys have had success. So you just continue to go back to the well with those programs that you trust and you know, and have, you know, gotten the right kids to your school. And that's important. It's, you got to get the right kids too. It's not an exact science. Like, there are guys that we take a chance on. We get that to come to St. A's, and maybe we don't know what they're going to be, and they turn out to be this great kid and this great lacrosse player. And so sometimes you get lucky, but consistently we've just been able to get the right kids to our school.
Yeah, and I think one of the things too that you guys are in the NE10. The NE10, for people that aren't familiar with Division II, is absolutely the best conference in Division II. That is not an opinion statement. It's just where teams finish, how good they are, how well they play lacrosse. There isn't another division that touches them in Division II. There is another conference that touches them in Division II. So it's even more remarkable that you were able to have kind of the success that you've had over the last couple of years, especially, you know, culminating, as you said, in last year's team. What do you need to do in 2022 to maintain your success?
We just need to be more consistent, I think. That's our problem right now. And get guys to develop that consistency in practice, guys that haven't played a ton, and they could be inconsistent in practice, right? When you're you're probably the sixth or fifth attackman, because you have these great days, and then you have some days where you're not there and doing the things that we need you to do to have success. So that's what we're fighting right now. We didn't do that well this weekend at Springfield. We didn't get off the bus. Our energy was low, and we were just not the team we needed to be. And yesterday we had meetings, and it was like, the sky is falling, the world is ending, and what do we got to do to turn this around, right? And so it shows that we care and that guys care, and they want to hold the standard that we've played to in the past few years. So for us, we basically, the conclusion we came to is we've been inconsistent in practice this year. And so we need guys to be consistent. They need to show up every day. And we need to be consistent as a team. Like, even in the game, we were inconsistent in the first quarter, and then we had a great second quarter, and then we're inconsistent again. And so we're kind of riding this roller coaster. So for us to be the team we want to be, we need to be consistently at a high level in practice, because that obviously leads into games. And that's really the message that we're sending to our guys. We obviously need some guys to step up as well and fill roles that have been left by seniors who had started for us for 4 years. A guy like Matt Ward and Griffin Shoemaker, Ryan Richards as well. Those guys, they started as freshmen for us. They played in a conference championship game as freshmen for us, and they obviously played a huge role for us last year. So those are three spots on offense where we need to fill with a younger guy, or maybe a guy who needs to step up and take on a new role. So those guys need to be more consistent, and we need to be more consistent as a team to have the success that we want to have and, you know, do what we did last year, which isn't going to be easy. You talked about the NE10. You look at Bentley, just in Massachusetts or New England, Bentley, Assumption, St. Mike's, Southern New Hampshire, Franklin Pierce, you know, and then in New York, you got Pace, who's great, who we were lucky enough to beat last year, Adelphi that we didn't play, and Lemoyne, and even St. Rose, who's a team that we've lost to in the past and has made the NE10 tournament. So they're just, it's a gauntlet. And so if you don't show up one day, you're going to get beat. And it doesn't matter who you're playing. If you don't show up and you're not ready to play, you will get beat. And that's what we can't afford to have happen. We need to show up, play well every game, play with effort, discipline, and toughness every time we step on the field.
Coach Mariano was not happy that he lost to you guys. I texted him afterwards, because we go back with the pro game, and he was like, they're tough.
Yeah.
You know, like, very short.
Yeah, we talk a lot. He texts. I mean, he texts and calls everyone, but, you know, he's texting and calling me a lot. And so, the conversation with him for a week or two after the game, wasn't much of it. But but we know, like, they're a really good program. I mean, yeah. I think they got a transfer from Albany this year. They're going to be right back, you know, in that top 10 in the country. And that's a huge game for us, but so are those other games. Like Bentley, that's a really, really good program. Assumption has been really good in the past. Southern New Hampshire is our rival. You know, Franklin Pierce, Coach Senator, does a great job with them. They're just tough and play their style. And then you got St. Mike's, who I think is an up-and-coming program, and, you know, showed that last year as well. So those New England teams in the Any 10 are good.
Mike, in terms of recruiting process, how involved are your assistant coaches in the process? And do you make the final decision, or is it a group decision in terms of the players you want to bring in?
It's somewhat of a group decision. Those guys are very part-time as far as their positions. So, and they both have other jobs. And, you know, we have a volunteer assistant as well. So I kind of try to take the lead on that just because I'm full-time. It's my job to do that. And these guys put in so many hours during the season that I don't expect them to grind the recruiting trail. If they were full-time, I would. But they're doing so much for our program and with our players that I try to get out as much and do more of the recruiting. You know, Coach Nardella, if a kid emails us, he'll text me, hey, saw this kid's tape, love him, we should get him on campus. So those conversations happen. You know, if I'm going to offer a kid, we talk before we do it. So there's communication there. And then if they can get to recruiting events, they do. They get to a few every year. They're involved in the club program, so they get to some events as well. But again, like Anthony Nardella, who's our assistant coach, he's a teacher in Billerica. So he wakes up at like 5:30 in the morning, drives to Billerica. School starts around 7:00. This is the spring. Leaves Billerica High at 2:30, gets to St. A's. If we practice at 6:00, he's not leaving St. A's until 8:00 at night and drives all the way from Manchester, New Hampshire back to Beverly, Mass. Okay. So this guy's day is insane. So, and our guys, I talk about it all the time. We appreciate so much the work he puts in. So it's like, Anthony, you crushed it. You got to take some time in the summer to do stuff with your family and the things that are going to recharge the battery so you can be ready to go in the fall.
How close are you to having a full-time assistant coach?
You know, those have been discussions. Some other programs have added assistant coaches at St. A's in the recent this year, actually. So, you know, it could definitely be a possibility. We just have to figure out what that structure would be and the roles that those guys would take on. But I actually love the way it works right now because, you know, I don't think Anthony could take a full-time job with us. Our goalie coach, Cam Hayward, who's done an unbelievable job with our goalies and with CJ Hart, obviously, you know, he might be able to. So it would just have to be something we'd have to figure out. And obviously the school has to back it first. So.
Coach, last kind of, not even observation, but kind of something that I wrote about in the article about seeing you guys in fall ball. There's a lot of coaches that, you know, stand on a pulpit and tell guys where to go and have a whistle, and that's what they do, right? And then they kind of instruct and their assistants come in and do the rest. Coach Shimada set up the cones and the goals for the practice. And at the end of practice, he picked up all the cones. And I was sitting there and I was like, I've never seen a college coach do that in my life. Where does that kind of drive for you come from? And how do you kind of articulate, you know, your process in doing things like that for your players?
I think you just got lucky that I happened to do that day. maybe it was because we were on the grass field, but no, I mean, I just want to be as active as possible in teaching our guys and in running drills. You know, I think we do a great job of myself and Coach Nardella running a lot of our drills and being active and setting them up. You know, Coach Nardella set up the drills last night for all of our cones for all of our drills last night. So, you know, it's just you also get it. Like, I think it's maybe Coach Wooden who used to do this, like, or I don't know who it is, but like, we'll go into the locker room after a you know, a game and visiting team locker room, make sure the locker room is spotless. If we have to, we'll pick up stuff. I mean, after our Lemoyne loss in Lake Erie, we're making sure the locker room's clean. Our guys do that as well. But like, if I'm not doing the little things like that, how can I expect my guys to? So I think a lot comes from the top. And if I can do a little thing like that, or we can do a little thing like that as coaches, that goes a long way. We do have guys who are in charge of that stuff. So maybe they just weren't doing their job that day either, but, like, there's nothing above our coaching staff or below.
No egos.
Yeah, it's we just want to get better. We want to learn. We want to have good practices, and we want our guys to do that as well.
Coach, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we want to thank you for joining us. And you know, best of luck in the 2022 season. You're definitely one of the best teams in New Hampshire, if not the best, in my opinion. So I enjoy watching you guys play, and it just so happens that you might be the closest one to where I live. So I'll definitely be out and checking you guys out this spring.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and good talking to both you guys. Jack, good to see you.
Good to see you, Mike. Good luck. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks. And that was Mike Shimano, a little D2 flavor on the podcast. We like how that tastes.
Enjoyed very much talking to him, and he is a relentless recruiter. And the reason why they're having so much success on the field is, you know, it's the players he's been able to get on campus and get them to come to St. A's and understand they're going to get a good education. And one of the things I didn't realize is that if you go to St. A's, you can get merit money for academics.
Yep.
You can also get athletic money. And you can also, if you qualify, apply for financial aid. So, you know, you can financially make it very affordable to get a good education and play lacrosse at a very high level.
In one of the most beautiful states in all of America, the great state of New Hampshire, which is why I love it so much. And, you know, he as a coach too, you know, there's two sides that to every coach, right? There's the coach on the sideline, and then there's the coach that you talk to after the game. And I think, you know, Coach Shimon is very similar. There's not a lot of break between those two kind of personalities. He's very consistent. He's, you know, and he asks for that consistency from his players. And that was one of his main points.
Yeah, what you see is what you get with Mike. You know, he's a straight shooter. He tells you the way it is, and that's what you want in a coach. He's a great communicator with his players, and they respect him, and they believe in him. And, you know, we mentioned he does the little things. He, you know, takes the goals off the field, sets up the cones, picks up the trash after big games, and leads by example.
It's absolutely the kind of coach that you want to play for, or you want to have your kids play for. Great talking to him, and hopefully we'll have some more D2 coaches on the podcast. And we want to thank you again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.